There are, of course, those who do not want us to speak. How did this happen? Who's to blame? Well, certainly there are those who are more responsible than others. They felt comfortable. But again, truth be told, if you're looking for the guilty, you need only look into a mirror. I know why you did it. I know you were afraid. Who wouldn't be? War, terror, disease. There were a myriad of problems which conspired to corrupt your reason and rob you of your common sense. Fear got the best of you, and in your panic, you turned to the now High Chancellor, and all he demanded in return was your silent, obedient consent. But if you see what I see, if you feel as I feel, and if you would seek as I seek, together we shall give them a fifth of November that shall never, ever be forgot.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. If I were the devil, if I were the prince of deception, I'd want to shroud the world in unyielding darkness. I'd seize control over the lands and masses, but I wouldn't be satisfied until I had quashed the boldest voice of truth. InfoWars. So I'd work meticulously to control the world. I'd target platforms like InfoWars first. I'd initiate a campaign of silence. With the subtlety of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Believe only what you're told. To the young, I would whisper, InfoWars is a fake news conspiracy theory network. I would convince them that man needs no alternate perspectives, no dissenting voices, no questions against the status quo. I would assure them that InfoWars is false, and what's approved is true. And the old, I would teach to say after me, Our Father, which art in censorship. If I were the devil, I'd soon have people at war with InfoWars, platforms at war with free speech, and nations at war with freedom of thought, until each in its turn was uniform. If I were the devil, I would undermine platforms like InfoWars from being a refuge for the inquisitive until before you knew it, you'd have suppression and censorship at every door. Soon, I'd have unity and misinformation. I'd have influential figures promoting a single narrative. Soon, I could evict InfoWars from social media, then from search engines, and then from the homes of patriots. I would lure society into believing only one perspective, dismissing InfoWars as falsehood. And what do you bet I could get whole states to promote uniformity as progress? I would convince the young that independent platforms are outdated, that compliance is more comfortable, that what you see in the mainstream media is the only perspective. In other words, if I were the devil, I wouldn't want you to visit InfoWars.com/show today.
We don't make this stuff up. Believe me, I wish we were. Believe it. But when I get this info, I'm going to tell you no matter what happens. You can be guaranteed of that. No matter what happens, I will go 100%, period. And that's it. Excuse me. Reason I start yelling, folks, is this is life and death stuff, okay? And my adrenaline just goes crazy because at a subconscious level, I realize this is combat, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a joke. This is not a game. It's not good to serve evil. All these globalists look like reanimated corpses, and they all just get off on destruction and power, and their empire's collapsing, sucking America down with it, and they're not going to let it collapse without starting World War III. That's what all this is about.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com/show and share the link today. And now, the man who won't be silenced. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Chase Geiser, your host for the next 2 hours. We've got outstanding news to cover, amazing clips to share, and we have an outstanding guest as well. Kirk Elliott is going to be joining us in about 30 minutes. For 30 minutes, so make sure you stay tuned and make sure you visit InfoWarsStore.com. A miracle happened here at InfoWars and we got bodies back in stock. We never thought we were going to be able to order inventory again, but today, bodies is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. This could be the last opportunity you have to get it because it's always a prayer as to whether or not we're going to get some of our flagship products back in stock again. So please go to InfoWarsStore.com right now, get bodies, and be the reason we are still on the air. Stay tuned for more on the other side.
Oh. An InfoWars fan favorite is now back in stock after over a year of not being available. It is the vitamin C and zinc with rose hips. Now, this is a copy of Linus Pauling, who won the Nobel Prize for his findings on vitamin C's formula. It is 1,000 milligrams of organic vitamin C with zinc to take it into the cells and rose hips. He believed that supercharged it. This formula is amazing. We've not had it for over 12 months, and now it's available back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. It is simply incredible. What it does for your whole body, your immune system, is next level. So whether you're in super good health or not in good health, everybody benefits from this formula. It's back in stock, discounted at InfoWarsStore.com. Vitamin C and zinc with rose hips at InfoWarsStore.com. And it funds the operation. So that's a win-win. Get your vitamin C with zinc, the Linus Pauling formula, at InfoWarsStore.com.
Patriots' choice and globalists' dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Chase Geiser, your host for the next 2 hours. Alex Jones will be back in studio perhaps later today, but on the air for sure tomorrow and Sunday. He is loaded for bear and ready to awaken all patriots with a semblance of America in their hearts so that we can take back this country on November 5th. Now, we've seen this campaign really ramp up over the course of the last several days. This week has been a wild ride. And we are in the midst of the honeymoon phase for Kamala Harris. She made the decision to choose Tim Walz as her running mate instead of Josh Shapiro. And both of these candidates were really bad. They were terrible options, but she seems to have chosen the less formidable opponent for the Trump ticket in Walz. And we're going to get into some of these reasons. Obviously, this stolen valor thing is a major factor. We have clips going all the way back to 2009 complaining about his stolen valor claims. And this has been a problem for him his entire career. So it's not really a surprise that we see from the left this disingenuous behavior. We know that Kamala has been misleading the public as to her racial background. She's traveling all over the country and changing her accent depending on which audience she's speaking to. We have clips of her acting like she's from the hood when she speaks to a certain socioeconomic demographic. And we have clips of her acting completely differently in front of other audiences. While we have Tim Walz going around and saying that he believes that fourth graders who are suffering from gender dysphoria should be totally given the care of the state in terms of facilitating their transition, all while he claims that he used weapons of war in war. This all in the context of the DOJ really ramping up its case against Hunter Biden. So the Biden thing is falling apart. Kamala is making a fool of herself. She's got to have celebrities perform at her rallies in order for anyone to attend. And then she brags about the audience size post facto, even though the audience is not there to see her whatsoever. And then Tim Walz is bumbling around like a fool, basically ignoring any questions or evidence of his stolen valor claims. And the evidence is overwhelming. This is not speculation. This is not a cheap shot. This is not something that's just said about an opponent that's not really true, that you let ride. This man claimed that he fought in war using weapons of war when he never did. And now he's running to be the vice president of the United States. But my concern is the disparity between the activity I see among the Harris campaign and the Trump campaign. Obviously, I'm voting for Donald Trump. Obviously, this has been one of the most inspirational election seasons in the history of the United States, what with Trump taking a bullet for our republic, surviving, standing up and saying, fight, fight, fight. And Trump's outstanding performance in the debate on June 27th, which annihilated Joe Biden. I mean, if Trump wins on November 5th, I think he'll be the first president in the history of the United States who successfully beat two candidates from the opposing party in the same race. He beat Joe Biden to the point where he had to quit because victory just wasn't there. And we've got Nancy Pelosi admitting that she is the one who pressured Joe out of the race. And then now he's going to beat Kamala Harris, I hope, I pray to God. And so he'll have successfully defeated two Democratic primary candidates who both had enough delegates to be the candidate for the president of the United States for the Democratic Party in a single campaign. This is like a two-on-one rigged situation here. I actually want to show you this clip of Nancy Pelosi. This is clip number 31. And it reminds me of this clip that came out a couple of weeks ago where she admitted that she took full responsibility for the failure that was January 6th. She owned up to the fact that she failed and did not have enough security at that event. Now, she seems to be committing the same error where on video she's basically admitting that she was responsible for yet another coup, another false flag, another operation that totally undermines the integrity of any democratic process in our elections here in the United States. This is clip number 31.
I love him so much. I think he's been really a fantastic president of the United States. So I really wanted him to make a decision of a better campaign because they were not facing the fact of what was happening. Just a little background. I've never been that impressed with his political operation.
Biden's operation.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I just haven't been. They won the White House. Bravo. Right. Mm-hmm. But so my concern was this ain't happening. And we have to make a decision for us this to happen. And the president has to make the decision for that to happen. Let me just say, I won't say necessarily I knew what I was doing at that time. I knew what I was doing in the whole thing, not just that
show. And what was that?
That Donald Trump would never set foot in the White House again.
There you go. So all principles, all values can go out the window if it means defeating Donald Trump. And what's really interesting about those comments right there is not only does it show that she's willing to totally undermine the integrity of all of our elections in order to ensure that Donald Trump never has power in the White House again, but it also implies to me that she would be willing to even take his life. And it seems like the rest of the world has totally forgotten that there was an assassination attempt on Donald Trump just weeks ago. It seems like they have totally forgotten, despite the fact that there's new footage every week, new witnesses every week, new testimonies every week. Despite the fact that it keeps coming up, everyone seems to have forgotten the fact that there was an assassination attempt on Donald Trump. And I'm not just trying to remind everyone over and over again until November 5th of how brave he was and how inspirational it was, but I'm trying to emphasize how obvious it is that this was a deep state operation to take Donald Trump's life. I think it was Joe Biden's Hail Mary. I think he thought, all right, they won't try to push me out as the candidate. They won't try to 25th Amendment me as the candidate if Donald Trump dies. If he died, then I wouldn't have to quit being the president. Then I wouldn't have to withdraw from this race because victory would then be ensured. And I think that he behaved like a Clinton or an Obama, and he just saw to it that this assassination attempt was going to happen. I think the deep state was behind it. I think the leftist regime was behind it and others. And yes, maybe it is the case that this shooter was a lone wolf, but lone wolves are the status quo for the deep state in terms of actually seeing to it that a political opponent is assassinated or killed. So it seems to me that this person was used by the political class to assassinate Donald Trump. And everybody is forgetting about it. I mean, I'm even hearing rumors that the Waltz campaign and staffers are joking about it and bragging about how this is like a forgotten issue. And I'm concerned that by the time November 5th comes around, people are going to forget that Donald Trump is the leading candidate. And for that reason, there was an attempt on his life. I mean, it's like a no-brainer that if there's an assassination attempt on a candidate who's leading in the polls, that is the hero of the story. That is the person that you're supposed to vote for. But we're seeing a lot more activity from the Harris campaign than from the Trump campaign. And I'm just praying that after this conversation that Donald Trump has with Elon Musk on Monday evening, Donald Trump will return to X and be active because the stakes are so high. He needs to use all of the tools at his disposal in order to defeat this leftist regime. And speaking of leftist regime, we have clip after clip after clip just proving how much of a leftist Kamala Harris really is, how much of a collectivist, Marxist, frankly, communist she really is. And let's just start with clip number 6 here of Kamala talking about fair outcomes in a very hyperbolic way. Clip 6.
Balance. and then the outcome will be fair. And isn't that what we're talking about in this here election?
Yes. Yes.
We're saying we just want fairness. We want dignity for all people.
Yeah.
We want to recognize the right all people have to freedom and liberty to make choices, especially those that are about heart and home, and not have their government telling them what to do.
Yeah.
Our campaign is about saying we trust the people.
Yeah.
We see the people. We know the people. You know, one of the things I love about our country? We are a nation of people who believe in those ideals that were foundational to what made us so special as a nation. We believe in those ideals. And the Sisters and Brothers of Labor have always fought for those ideals. Always fought for those ideals. And we know we are a work in progress. We haven't yet quite reached all of those ideals, but we will die trying because we love our country and we believe in who we are. And that's what our campaign is about. We love our country. We believe in our country. We believe in each other. We believe in the collective. We're not falling for these folks who are trying to divide us, trying to separate us, trying to pull us apart. That's not where the strength lies. And there is that. And so I say to all the members of UAW, and Sean Fain is the first who I talked to about this, I am so deeply honored. As a lifelong supporter of union labor, for Tim and I to have the endorsement of UAW.
Oh my gosh. She's so deeply honored. That's like somebody breaking into your house, stealing your TV, and saying that they feel honored to have such a nice TV. She has stolen this election. Not a single vote for her from Democratic voters in the primary. She saw to it that the president of the United States was blackmailed specifically by Nancy Pelosi, who just admitted it on the clip that we showed you, blackmailed into withdrawing from the race so that he wouldn't suffer the humiliation of being brought to justice via the 25th Amendment, because he knew he couldn't pass any cognitive test. He knew that if there was a 25th Amendment approach and there was an investigation and they really got to the bottom of what was going on, it would become apparent that he was suffering from cognitive decline, dementia in a very real way since 2019 at least. So she has blackmailed her way into this position without a single vote, and she claims to love fairness and democracy when everything that she does is absolutely antithetical to both of those principles, those institutions, those notions. This woman is absolutely insane. And not only is she wretched and evil, but she's totally unlikable in every way. I mean, Harry Sisson and others were bragging in clip 12 here about how Kamala Harris did such a great job handling this heckler, when she really just came off as a Karen, first of all, in the clip. And what she said didn't even make sense. Let's watch.
He intends to surrender our fight against the climate crisis, and he intends to end the Affordable Care Act. You know what? If you want Donald Trump to win, then say that. Otherwise, I'm speaking.
How is that a comeback? If you want Donald Trump to win, then say that, otherwise I'm speaking. Well, obviously that person wants Donald Trump to win, whatever he said. And she's going to give him the stink eye? Unbelievable. She's so tough. She's dead serious. Look how stoic she is. And not only is it obvious that she's abundantly unlikable and evil and corrupt and unworthy and unqualified and incompetent, all the things that a president shouldn't be, she manifests, she embodies herself. But we have her running mate who is obviously guilty of stolen valor in a number of different ways, on a number of different occasions. We're going to show clip 14 here. This is Tim Walz saying that he used weapons of war in war, just simply brazenly false. Clip number 14.
Hope woke up like many of you did 5 weeks ago and said, Dad, you're the only person I know who's in elected office. You need to stop what's happening with this. I'll take my kick in the butt for the NRA. I spent 25 years in the Army and I hunt. And I gave the money back. And I'll tell you what I have been doing. I've been voting for common sense legislation that protects the Second Amendment. But we can do background checks. We can do CDC research. We can make sure we don't have reciprocal carry among states. And we can make sure that those weapons of war that I carried in war is the only place where those weapons are at.
Now, you know who actually was deployed in a war? J.D. Vance. We're going to show you in clip 13. This is J.D. Vance responding to Tim Walz's stolen valor, his lies about service, his obvious dodging of service, leaving the military right before it was going to be deployed, as you know, it was going to be deployed into the war. So clip number 13 here.
When the United States Marine Corps, when the United States of America asked me to go to Iraq to serve my country, I did it. I did what they asked me to do it, and I did it honorably, and I'm very proud of that service. When Tim Walz was asked by his country to go to Iraq, you know what he did? He dropped out of the Army and allowed his unit to go without him, a fact that he's been criticized for aggressively by a lot of the people that he served with. I think it's shameful.
So not only is the left just completely denying the fact that Tim Walz never served in combat in any way, shape, or form, and he is guilty of stolen valor here. I mean, there's images of him wearing hats with the Green Beret symbol and stuff. He was never a Green Beret. But so many of these surrogates and people that are associated with the campaign seem to have no idea that J.D. Vance was actually in the military. This is clip number 15.
Well, here is Tim Walz, who enlisted when he was 17 years old. He served in the National Guard for 24 years. And I'm not aware of any military service that J.D. Vance has ever served. So let's just make the comparison there. And what happened in the tragedy of the killing of George Floyd and then the unrest.
So she's going on CNN. She has no idea that J.D. Vance was in the Marines. So while they totally deny the fact that J.D. Vance actually did serve in the military, they ignore the fact that Tim Walz has repeatedly over the course of years been guilty of stolen valor. And everything about this is all staged. She's a fake candidate. She's not really supposed to be the candidate. He's a fake warrior. I mean, frankly, Donald Trump has seen more combat than Tim Walz. I mean, Donald Trump actually got shot for this country. Tim Walz never went into a combat zone for it. That's the real disparity here. And we have example after example of how disingenuous these people are. I mean, in clip 20 here, just look at this promo. It's exactly like the promo video that was made between the Obamas and Kamala Harris weeks ago when they happened to be recording an unexpected phone call where the Obamas endorsed Kamala Harris. And she answers, oh, hi, how are you guys doing? Why are you calling me? And it's all filmed. Obviously, it was staged for the promo. Same thing happening here when Harris calls Walz to say that she would like him to be the vice presidential candidate on the ticket. It's a stage thing. There's film crews on both sides of the phone call, and they're acting like they're having this. Let's run the clip.
Hi, this is Tim.
It's Kamala Harris. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Madam Vice President.
Listen, I want you to do this with me. Let's do this together. Would you be my running mate, and let's get this thing on the road?
I would be honored, Madam Vice President.
The joy that you're bringing back to the country, the enthusiasm that's out there, it'll be a privilege to take this with you across the country.
Well, let me tell you, I have just the utmost respect for you. I have really enjoyed our work together. You understand our country. You have dedicated yourself to our country in so many different and beautiful ways. And we're going to do this. We're going to win. And we're going to unify our country and remind everyone that we are fighting for the future for everyone. So let's get out there and get this done, okay?
Let's do it. Do the work in front of us. Let's win this thing.
That's right. All right, buddy. I'll see you soon. Take care. Thank you.
Ma'am.
Okay.
And then here she is in clip 22 telling a sob story about how her career began out of a personal passion for helping the victims of sexual assault. This is clip number 22 here. This is just another example of Democrats exploiting the suffering and ills of other people for the sake of their own political gain without any conscience whatsoever, just using it as a story to tell to garner emotional support and get votes based off of lie after lie after lie.
So, Mika, when I was in high school, I learned that my best friend was being molested by her stepfather. And when I learned about it, I said to her, you have to come live with us. I called my mother. My mother said, of course she has to come stay with us, and she did. And so at a young age, I decided I wanted to do the work that was about protecting women and children. And I became a prosecutor, and I specialized in particular, child sexual assault. And the fact that after the Dobbs decision came down, that laws have been proposed and passed that, as Hadley has said, make no exceptions even for rape or incest. Think about what these extremists are saying to a survivor of a crime of violence to their body, a survivor of a crime that is a violation of their body, and to say to that survivor, and you have no right or authority
for her to have the audacity to come out and claim that she loves survivors of sexual assault and she supports them and fights for them, given the fact that she was the vice president of the United States under Joe Biden, who is documented in his own daughter's diary as being a molester. Clip after clip after clip of him smelling hair and pinching the nipples of underage girls. It's all documented. Even these victims have admitted it. He's actually been accused credibly of sexual assault at least once, if you count his daughter's stuff, multiple times. And she worked for him. She totally sold out. And remember, she was actually the border czar. And you want to talk to me about caring about rape and incest when you've opened up our southern border and refused to do anything about it? Frankly, you've sponsored the invasion of the United States by the worst people all over the world through our southern border to the tune of tens of millions of people, hundreds of thousands of them from countries of interest, committing rapes and murders. So don't talk to me about how you feel for the victims of rape and incest when they can't get an abortion, when you have literally sponsored the rape of thousands of people in the United States because of your leftist collectivist policies. Give me a break. And let's just see how genuine she is here in clip number 23. Let's just see how personal she is with her constituents and her voters that she's trying to garner the support of.
So good to be back in Michigan. Listen, let me tell you, I am clear. The path to the White House runs right through this state. And listen, I am clear. The path to the White House runs right through this state. I took on perpetrators of all kinds. I took on perpetrators of all kinds and had a summer job at McDonald's. I had a summer job at McDonald's. So hear me, Detroit, when I say, I know Donald Trump's type. I know Donald Trump's type. And are we ready to fight for it? And are we ready to fight for it? And when we fight, we win.
Oh, it's so focus group canned. It's just garbage, garbage, garbage. Folks, we're coming up on a break. We've got the wonderful, talented Dr. Kirk Elliott joining us for the next 30 minutes. Make sure you stay tuned and make sure you go to InfoWarsStore.com. After I speak to Kirk for the next 30 minutes, we're going to get right back into some of these Kamala clips because there's just so many. We have to get to the bottom of this if we're going to make the right decision in November. Stay with us, folks.
We got a big announcement at InfoWarsStore.com. All InfoWars MD supplements, a premium supplement line, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Discover the newest line of supplements from InfoWars designed to boost vitality and enhance overall well-being. Whether you're looking to support immune health, improve cognitive function, or increase energy levels, our meticulously crafted formulations cater to diverse needs. We've got something for everyone at the InfoWars MD line. Ageless Vitality Collagen. Just look into all the benefits of collagen, folks. If you're not getting any collagen in your system, this is a great way to do so. Ageless Vitality Collagen. superfood greens. Are you getting the fiber? Are you getting the greens in your life? If you're not eating your vegetables, this is a great way to supplement that. Superfood greens, Mushroom Max, all the great benefits of mushrooms. You might not like eating them. I'm not a big fan of them myself, but you can get it in a capsule. You don't have to worry about the nasty taste or texture and get all the benefits. Mushroom Max, Better Mood Plus, Libido RX, Turmeric 95. Man, the benefits of turmeric are just incredible. When I'm not taking turmeric, I genuinely can notice the difference. It's one of those types of supplements where you notice when you're not taking it. And for me, it's kind of the soreness and maybe some inflammation after a workout or if I play basketball for a couple hours the next day. I notice the difference. I notice the difference. And it's kind of sad. It reminds you you're not going to be young forever, but that's why turmeric is so important. Turmeric 95, 25% off. The prebiotic formula, the prostate support, very important for men. Nerve Renew, Joint Max Relief. That's both of those things are key. And then good night's sleep. You know, if you're having trouble sleeping, a supplement always great for that. Good night's sleep. All of these, the InfoWars MD premium supplement line exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. We appreciate your support there. That's what makes everything we do here possible.
So they always tell you it's the most important election of your lifetime, but of course, this one actually is. That's demonstrable. And it's also, because it is so important, being censored at every level by the tech companies. So we were thinking about this a couple of months ago, and we thought, why not get on the road live in front of actual people, live audiences, coast to coast, a nationwide tour where we can't be censored. That'd be good. It would also be fun. So we're doing it. We're going to be on stage with some of our friends, some of the most fascinating people we know, the most recognizable people we know, responding to what is happening in America this September in real time. It'll be just like the podcast, but it's going to be live. So we're excited to announce that our friend Larry Elder is coming to join us in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Our friend John Rich will be there with us in Sunrise, Florida. And we're adding more stops. We just added another stadium show in Reading, Pennsylvania. We'll be joined on stage by Alex Jones. They tell you what Alex Jones is like. Have you seen him in person? You should. Make up your own mind. It's going to be fun as hell and interesting and intense, and we hope you will join us. Go to TuckerCarlson.com right now to get your tickets. See you there.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. InfoWars.com/show.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
America has been captured. We have an occupied government. Any loyal American who does not want to be a complete slave of a biomedical extermination operation needs to get informed quick, get right with God, and then start telling everybody you know about it and not complying with the system. The system is here to destroy us. Complying with it will get you killed. Period.
We told you what was going to happen, and it did. Now we're telling you what's coming. At Real Alex Jones on X.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The voice the globalists want silenced. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the Alex Jones Show. We are joined by the esteemed Kirk Elliott. I'm always pleased to speak with you, Kirk. What is on your mind?
Well, what's on everybody's mind, actually, and that's all this talk about recession, right? It's like, so normally when you talk about a recession, you think of the Great Depression, right? It's like, oh, there was food lines, Dust Bowl, and nobody could afford anything. This is different. The what we're seeing this time is, let's define terms a little bit. So recession is a slowdown in business, right? Mom and pop stores aren't selling anything. Corporate America is not selling anything because people don't have jobs or they can't afford things, right? So that's where we've got this slowdown of the economy. But what we have this time that we didn't have during the Great Depression is massive amounts of inflation. Mm-hmm. So this is called stagflation, right? It's like stagnant economy plus inflation. And that's the worst of all possible scenarios. That's what we had in the late 70s during the Carter years, which is rising prices, with inflation going up, they're printing money like there's no tomorrow. Higher taxes so people can't afford the higher prices. Wages coming down and unemployment skyrocketing, right? It's like, man, for a policymaker, that is the worst possible scenario to get out of ever. It's like almost impossible. So when we look back at how did Reagan get out of this when he became president in 1980? Well, inflation at the time was 14.3%. Well, all of the viewers out there who are old enough to remember, I mean, I can remember I was in like junior high at the time, right? But interest rates went to 18%. Yeah. If you had a 30-year mortgage back then, it was 18%. So as an economist, I always have to ask, well, why? It's like, I don't necessarily care what the numbers. It's like, well, why did we get there? Well, because inflation is 14.3. If you're going to use interest rates to slow down inflation, it has to be greater than the interest rate or the inflation rate, or else it's not going to work. So fast forward to today. We've got unofficially inflation's hovering around 15%. So to think that the Fed, when they lie about, oh, we can lower interest rates and we're gonna have an emergency rate reduction right now because of everything that's happening in Japan. And you know what? Why they're saying that is because they know that it's a catch-22 of all catch-22s. If they raise rates when they haven't beat inflation yet, it's actually going to it's just going to kill the economy because we have so much debt. See, this is where we were different from the late 70s. The late 70s, early 80s, we didn't have as much debt as we do now. So what they're wanting to do is like, okay, if we raise interest rates to slow down inflation, it's possibly going to work, but it's actually going to kill the economy. So therefore, they're saying, let's lower interest rates, get people spending, kick the can down the road even further, right? And they're avoiding this inevitable D-Day. But when they do that, when they lower rates instead of raising them to slow down inflation, they create more inflation, right? So this is the problem that we have. So as I look at this, there was this chart that I sent over to you. It's the ominous charts that show a really bleak outlook moving forward. So there's four charts on here. And when you look at all of them, it paints an ugly picture. So that top one, that's money velocity. So money velocity is when there's no demand for the US dollar. Like none. That's what the velocity is. When it's way down like it is, there is no demand for the US dollar. And of course there's not, Chase, because the BRICS nations are now getting rid of the petrodollar, trading in their own currencies. Nobody wants US treasuries anymore. Countries are dumping it like yesterday's trash. So there's no velocity. That means we are basically now stuck with our own mechanism for generating revenue, which is taxes, right? That's how the government makes money, is they tax people. Yes. Because we don't have any foreign inflow anymore. That's the problem here. Now, the next one shows the S&P 500. This is a function of stimulus money, right? So when you print money like there's no tomorrow, they're using that money to keep the markets propped up. Yeah. We've now hit this point of, all right, we're peaking. There's no real place for it to go except down. So when you analyze the markets, you have to say the stock market is a function of revenue, right? It's like they don't care how they get the revenue, whether it's you and me and everybody watching this show spending money, that's revenue, or whether it's the government buying the stocks through stimulus and injection. That's revenue for companies as well.
Right.
But that's a revenue. This is where we are. And so when we have no more built-in demand for our currency, we're toast. Because now whenever we do something like this, we're going to create even more inflation. So how can we tell? The next chart, federal debt. Okay. This just tells us we've been printing money like there's no tomorrow. Look at our debt, right? And when you look at Bidenomics and his budget, you know, that they have coming moving forward, what is it going to look like? You know, $2.8 trillion of deficit. So, every time you have a deficit every single year, $2.8 trillion here, $2 trillion there, all of that added together comes to our national debt,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is now like $37 trillion.
I mean, right. I've seen the real-time ticker. It's insane.
Well, it's absolutely insane. If you go to usdebtclock.org, mm-hmm. right? It's like it's constantly going up. But here's the wacky part about our debt, right? We're seeing $2.8 trillion a year, $2 trillion a year being added to it. And we're only at like 37, 38 trillion, right? But it went from 1776 until 1980 when Reagan became president. How much national debt do you think we had then? It wasn't even a trillion. It was like 900 billion. So it took over 200 years to go from zero to 900 billion. Now, we are adding $2.8 trillion a year, a year. When Obama became president, our national debt was $11 trillion. Now we're at 30. It's like they are spending like drunken sailors. And this is unsustainable, which is why the rest of the world no longer wants our U.S. treasuries. So therefore, what do people do? Right? So you look at the last chart. This just shows gold. Now, gold is absolutely starting to we're approaching all-time highs, right? Where this is why gold goes up. It thrives on political instability, uncertainty, chaos, change, unsustainable debt, inflationary pressures, all of that we're seeing. Now, when I've been doing a lot of shows lately on InfoWars, and people are calling and say, Kirk, you've got central banks that are backing their currencies with gold, and they're acquiring it and they're amassing it. Why don't you ever talk about gold? Right. So the reason is central banks, they have so much money that they're dealing with, they can't really buy silver because it's too cheap. It's like less than $30 an ounce. There's not enough of it. They can't actually back or quasi back a currency with silver because it's too cheap. And there's simply not enough of it available. So this is why they buy gold. Mm-hmm. It's $2,400, $2,500 an ounce. But here's where we as people can identify what's happening in the markets, the instability, the job numbers are awful, right? I mean, this last week, the job numbers are worse than it's ever been. And when you've got four months in a row, declining job numbers. Now everyone's saying recession. Goldman Sachs says, oh, the recession propensity is going to gone from 25% to 35% by the end of the year. Citibank is saying the same thing. Economists everywhere are saying, we are going into a recession. And I'm thinking, these economists are stupid. We already are in one, right?
Right.
It's not like we're going into one. We've been in one since COVID. But now, the reason why I don't allocate into gold right now is because silver is doing better, right? So I said, and there's reason for it. Silver will act like gold in the sense of it's a financial metal. It thrives like a barometer on uncertainty and chaos and turbulence and everything that we're seeing. But it's also an industrial metal. So as an industrial metal, you know, it's used for everything from electronics.
I've heard that like 60% of the world's silver is in landfills because it's used in so many electronics.
Yeah, I mean, you can't reclaim it, right? It's not like when the little squeak toy that you bought at Walmart that has a circuit board on it and there's silver solder points. You can't actually go and reclaim it because there's too much toxic stuff in there,
mm-hmm.
right? So it just goes away. It's not like aluminum that you recycle. Once it's used, it's done. So look at this article that I sent over to you on industrial demand could consume the entire silver market by 2025. All of it, just with industrial demand, let alone investor demand, right?
Well, a lot of superconductors are going to be needed for World War III, right? So if the military industrial complexes of the world need electronics for AI and hacking and all this tech, it makes sense that there would be a ramp up in demand.
Well, and we're now in a war economy. When you look at China and Taiwan and Russia and Ukraine and Israel against everybody, right? And it's like this is a war economy. Every single ICBM missile that gets shot into the air or big torpedo that we're seeing going through the ocean. They have about, on average, 11,000 ounces of silver in each one.
Wow.
In each one, right? So this becomes massive. So what is, I want to say, tell everybody, because I get calls constantly, like so many, that why don't you go into gold? Well, look at what's industrial demand for silver. What's it used for? Technological advancements in high-tech industries, it's skyrocketing. Solar panels, automotive, major consumers of silver, solar power usage, right? It's like you look at all the green agenda and everything that they do. Electric vehicles, mm-hmm. Okay, that uses silver. So here's where we can actually say, okay, you environmentalists, right, that you want all this solar and all this electric. It's like we might not agree with their policies nor like them or think that they're crazy, right? But when we look at what they need, we can take advantage of it, right? So rather than some of these trends taking advantage of us, we just identify an agenda, and it's like, what do they need for their agenda? They need silver. So if we invest in what they need, we can sell it to them at really, really high prices when it runs out. It's like, okay, we're going to take advantage of it. But military use is a key factor. Defense technology, aerospace applications. Mm-hmm.
And we even saw this silver week, as the stock market crashed, we saw that a lot of the military industrial complex businesses like Lockheed did very well relative to the other major companies.
Correct. They do, because this is because we're in a wartime economy. Right. See, and investing is a matter of perception as much as it is reality, right? So if people identify in their mind, it's like, ooh, this thing is going to be good in the future. It's not. It doesn't matter if it happens to be real or not. It's perception. Perception is reality. And when we've got wars and rumors of wars and inflation and all this, people are running scared, and this fear is consuming them, right? So therefore, in a war economy, silver is going to go through the roof. Now, here's the problem with all the demand for silver. There's not enough of it, right? So we've got mining challenges. We've got declining output from silver mines because all the easy silver has been found and taken out already. So now you have to go deeper into the earth. You have to build roads and build bridges and get the infrastructure developed, and that's exploration difficulties. I mean, you've got massive problems of declining output, and the COMEX depositories globally are simply running out. They're running out. Right.
So the supply is plummeting while the demand is skyrocketing. It's a no-brainer, yes, from an investment standpoint.
Absolute no-brainer, right? It's because this is our goal as a wise and prudent investor. Buy low, sell high, right? When we can go into something where the supply is not there, the demand is through the roof, the prices are just going to skyrocket. Because ultimately, we do run out, right? And when we run out, well, what is Sony and Samsung and Tesla going to do? They're going to say, well, okay, we'll offer whatever price necessary for us to get the silver so we can have a finished product, right? So this is where, when you own what they need and the prices go from $30 to $50 to $80 an ounce, we get to benefit from it. Now, in the last, so you've got that going on, but you've also got now the fundamental reasons why gold and silver both go up, and why normal asset categories that people are used to, equities, debt, you know, just money in the bank, right? Those are coming down. So the fundamental forces that drive gold and silver up also cause those other equity and debt markets to come down. Now, we've talked about recession, right? It's more of a stagflation, inflationary recession, not just a normal recession like the Great Depression, right? But mm-hmm. If you look at some of the stats behind what we're going into, this is really concerning. So the U.S. Unemployment rate has risen for four consecutive months. Four. That's the longest streak since 2008.
Wow.
So over the last 75 years, and I'm telling everybody this to give them confidence that, yeah, the economy might stink, the foundations around us are eroding, the pillars are collapsing, but there's an opportunity to be had here. So over the last 75 years, every single time that unemployment rose for four consecutive months, the U.S. economy entered into a recession, right? So So on InfoWars, when I'm, talking to you, a couple shows we've done with you and with Alex, we keep talking about this. We're ahead of the curve because now mainstream media is finally saying we're going into a recession. We've been telling everybody for 9 months we're in a recession, right? So now perception is becoming reality and things are starting to accelerate. So the jobless rate has surged from 3.8% in March to 4.3% in July. That's the highest level since October of 2021, right after COVID. And U.S. hires rate has declined to 3.4%, lowest level since 2020, in the height of COVID, right? So what does this tell us? U.S. labor market is contracting. When people aren't working, they're not spending. When people aren't spending, revenues are coming down, and this is where I think we're at the beginning of a collapse in the markets as we know it. And who's going to capitalize on that? China, Putin, the BRICS nations?
Right. It's a great excuse to subvert the dollar as the global reserve currency.
Well, and it makes their job easier. So you've got Putin out there spouting off saying we're going to de-dollarize the world and we're going to win. And the BRICS nations are going to be the new reserve currency. But they still had this problem. And that's the U.S. dollar was still the reserve currency. Right. But now you've got Biden, who's absolutely destroying the dollar. And Putin's got to be thinking, this is pretty sick. This is a cool deal. We're trying to destroy the dollar and we're getting a lot of help from Biden. We don't have to work as hard. Right. And so the BRICS nation, there's this pendulum shifting moment that's happening right underneath our nose, Chase, right underneath our nose, where all of these things, there's everything that we've known since 1944, when we became the world's reserve currency, are now changing.
Yeah.
And it's hard to change that, right? It's going to be very, very difficult because once it's gone, we're not getting it back. And I think it already is gone, right? So let's just say Trump were to come into office tomorrow, start turning things around, growing the economy, increasing our revenue as a nation, increasing wages, job numbers, are going through the roof because people are working, unemployment's coming down. I mean, is he going, even with that, that's going to be very prosperous for America again, just like it was once before. But is he going to get the reserve currency status back? Kind of doubt it. Because yeah. Once it's gone, it's gone. What are you going to do? Go to China and Russia and say, hey, you know that that reserve currency that we used to have and then Biden destroyed it? We want it back. It's like they're not giving it back.
Right.
Because they've got almost 70% of the world's population now in that trading block, we are not getting it back. I'm not saying that America is not going to be strong again. We just have to do it within reason. We have to control our spending. Trump is a great person to do that because he's brilliant at growing the economy. But the days of the U.S. dollar being the world's reserve currency are numbered or done already.
Wow. So what is... what does America look like as a successful nation in the future, not having the global reserve currency status?
So it just means that you need a smart president
right.
like Trump.
Obviously, we won't be able to sanction Iran and China and Russia in the same way because that was kind of tethered to that, right?
Yeah. So I think what it looks like is one of the best things that Trump is saying to actually fix the economy is get rid of personal income tax and replace it with tariffs on foreign goods.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what the founding fathers envisioned for our country, which means that's going to make all foreign goods more expensive because there's a tax on it. And that's going to force people to want to buy American, which means when jobs follow manufacturing, you've got more people working. So that's number one. You've got to solidify the money-making mechanism of our country. That will do it. But then, like you and I, when we look at our budget, and let's just say we're losing, so much money every single month, and you sit down at the dinner table and say, crap, talking to your wife and spouse, and say, we've got a problem. We're losing money every single month. And so what do you say? It's like, we've got to cut our spending. We've got to stop spending so much. Politicians don't do that.
Right.
See, they look at their balance sheet and they say, we don't have a spending problem. We've got a revenue problem. So let's raise taxes because we're not going to cut our spending, which is why we have $38 trillion worth of national debt. So what this is going to force us to do, and we don't have the reserve currency, is to look at the other side of the balance sheet. Not just when we have a problem, we need money, we go into the printing press and we either
the government's going to have to shrink. It's just not going to have a choice.
They're going to have to. And this is where it becomes painful for the government, because over 80% of all of our revenue every single year goes towards entitlements, mandatory payments, Social Security, women, infant, children programs, food stamps. They're entitlements, right? So if you start cutting that, you're not going to get votes. See, this is where you start to see social and economic upheaval. Mm-hmm. But how does it look moving forward? Discretion on our spending. You can't just go to the printing press without going into a hyperinflationary spiral like Venezuela, Argentina, Zimbabwe. You have to have discretion, which means it is going to force politicians to think like families and say, we got to cut spending. Unless we're going to go out and get 3 or 4 or 5 jobs like a family would do, right? It's like, just cut spending. That's going to be the first thing. But when you start to do that, it is going to create a foundation for success moving forward, where our success is based on our productivity and everything that we do. Our right. success is going to be based on debt like it is now, which to me isn't really success. That's fake. Right. So anyways, I think America becomes really, really strong. The only way that you can do that, though, and I'm not saying it's going to be an easy path to get there. It's going to be difficult. But the only way that you can do that is with a president who understands business, who understands politics, who's not a career politician, who says, hey, if I need money, I'm not just going to print it. If we need money, we have to create a foundation for success and encourage people to work and grow and thrive.
Wow, man, scary times that we're entering into. And thank you so much for coming on the show today, Kirk. It's always an honor and a pleasure to hear from you. You're so wise and prudent and knowledgeable about this. I want to encourage everybody in the audience to visit kepm.com/gold. Again, that's kepm.com/gold, or call 720-605-3900, 720-605-3900, and ask Kirk and his awesome team about gold and silver. Silver sounds like it's the most promising thing right now. So as we enter into this new era of less economic dominance as a nation, you can still use this as an opportunity to personally thrive by going to kepm.com/gold. Kirk, honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It's been great. We'll talk to you soon.
Obviously, silver's doing way better than gold in growth, and it's way undervalued. That's a fact. Why then are the central banks mainly hoarding gold?
Well, because there's simply not enough silver, right? It's like if you've got central banks that start allocating into silver when it's $30 an ounce and they want to have it be part of their reserves, it's like, okay, there's not enough silver in the world to do that. Right. So they have to do gold because it's $2,400 an ounce, not $30 an ounce. Right, so this is why
they've
central
got so many quadrillions
gold.
Of fake money. There's not if they there's too much fiat to even buy the silver, which I would yes. say then means silver still will always be the thing that grows the most.
Oh, so silver historically the numbers prove out that when gold is in a bull market, which it is, we're near all time highs. Silver does better than gold, so silver grows faster, and there's a reason why. Silver and gold both act as barometers to government distrust, right? It's the worse things get, the better financial metals do. They're a flight for safety. But what silver has that gold doesn't is it's a manufacturing metal. It's used in industry. So in aerospace, in defense, in electronics, in solar power, electric vehicles, all of that. The demand for silver is through the roof, Alex, and we're just taking advantage of that. And imagine what silver will do with Trump being president, somebody who actually grows the economy rather than having a stagnant economy. The industrial need for silver is absolutely going to explode.
Now you're right. Silver is the closest thing to a silver bullet. That's why they call it a silver bullet. People should go to kpm.com/gold right now and get silver now. We'll be right back.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.